From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
If you're a board gamer and you're looking for New Year's resolutions, look, just forget about all that stuff about playing X number of board games, X number of times. How about you just start by washing every day?
Hey?
No, that's
Trent.
Can't do that. That's ridiculous.
The Dice Man Cometh, telling it like it is, peeps. Keeping it real on the 2017 tip. Do people say that still?
I do not know.
Episode 147 of The Dice Man Cometh is what you're listening to on Thursday, the 5th of January, 2017.
Wow, we made it.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Hello, my name is Trent.
I'm Mark.
I am Leon.
And coming up on tonight's show, we are going to talk about one of the new hotnesses we mentioned, the brand new Arkham Horror, the card game. We're also going to talk about, well, we're going to give Trent a bit of a right of reply on Terraforming Mars, because when we spoke about it last time, he hadn't played, but he has now.
Your game of the year,
absolutely
it was.
Absolutely right. We're also going to have some news. We've got some Kickstarter coming from Leon. We're going to draw the competition! All of that and a whole lot more tonight on The Dice Men Cometh.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Let's get loud.
We weren't already?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Every time I die... 1977 is the name of the song, and they are the reason I won't be on the show next week, gents.
Ah.
I'm going over to Melb's to see him.
Ooh. Nice.
Let Live supporting.
That should be a great gig.
But it's good to be back in the studio tonight after a break, and it's good to be back for another year on Edge Radio with The Dice Men Cometh, with a whole new range of gaming options for you to waste your money and time on. And boy... have we got one for you tonight?
Oh, absolutely.
Mark's going to take us through what we've been playing lately, and it's a doozy.
Well, so if you know, if Magic the Gathering and Pokemon and those sort of things is crack cocaine for like little kids, then Fantasy Flight Games and their living card games is sort of the closest it comes to us adulty type people.
Kid-dults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about Arkham Horror, the card game. So it has the card game on the end with the air quotes.
How is this different and why is this necessary when we've already got, well, we talked about Mansions of Madness, my game of 2016.
Yes.
We've got Arkham Horror.
The board game.
Eldritch Horror.
Yes.
Elder Sign.
Right.
Yep.
Arkham.
There's also a Call of Cthulhu living card game, which is a one versus one.
There's the Arkham Knights.
Arkham Scrabble.
Arkham Asylum.
Arkham and Ladders.
Hey, people just can't get enough of Arkham, or more particularly, they can't get enough of H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos.
We're reaching peak tentacle this year, aren't we?
I don't know. Well, you know, recently we had the release of the 7th edition of the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Eldritch Horror is still going gangbusters. Mansion of Madness 2nd edition come out and is the hotness, but this one is blowing people away. I managed to track down the last copy in Hobart just before Christmas. Leon, you've got a copy as well.
I had one sent to my little door just before Christmas. I apologise if I'm spaced out at the moment. I've got too many peak tentacle jokes going through my head. I find it very difficult to focus at the moment.
So Arkham Horror the card game, it is a cooperative game where you're playing against the game. So the base set, because there's always a base set, comes with three adventures. And the idea is this is going to be a living card game and obviously a living campaign that goes on and on and on. I'll talk a bit more about that in the moment because there is a sort of a comparative model. Now, this is designed by Nate French and Matthew Newman from Fantasy Flight Games, and these guys have been the key designers behind Netrunner, behind the Lord of the Rings living card game, behind the Call of Cthulhu living card game, the Warhammer living card game, although I've heard it is a hard game, all that stuff. And the artist, now, I was really surprised because I'm going to say I love the art in this game. I love it, love it, love it. It is amazing one of the things that drew me into the game. But I thought it's going to be like Magic. They're going to have like 1,000 different artists that are doing this. All the art is by one guy.
Really?
Henning Ludvigsen.
One very busy guy.
From Norway. And he's a digital artist, so he's only working in the digital realm. But he is also, he's done a huge amount of the art for all those other Fantasy Flight card games I mentioned.
But I was going to say that, but it's the same art as your Eldritch and your Mansion of Madness.
But it's all new. Oh,
okay.
It's new for this game. It's not like, because I thought the same. I thought, oh, they've got so much
it's very similar.
Cthulhu art out there, they're just going to be able to recycle it. But no, most of this art is new.
Oh, cool.
Because they've got new characters, or they've got characters like the... The game comes with 5 characters.
So to be clear, Leon, it's old ideas,
right?
Dressed up with new art.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's another game where you're playing an investigator into 1920s noir.
Yeah, I mean, in Mansions, in Eldritch, in Arkham, in Elder Sign, even the main stable of investigators isn't in this game yet. They will be, trust me, because new expansions will bring new investigators. But they've gone to some of the lesser used investigators, which is great to see. So the base set plays 1 to 2 players. If you want to play 4 players, and we did try this the other day, you need to put 2 base sets together. And what you have, as I said, you're playing against the game, so you will play a character. I guess you can also play this solo, and I played it solo once.
Oh, I bet you did.
And I used 1 character, but I guess if you wanted to, excuse me, you could play more than 1 character. I like it playing with 1. I sort of felt like the 4 player didn't add a lot. Obviously, in fact, there was 4 of us there, and that was fun, and it is fun to share these stories. They are, from what I've seen so far, like great stories. I love the Cthulhu Mythos. We've loved playing the Call of Cthulhu role-play game, so we're in right into this stuff. We love Mansions of Madness. For me, though, I feel like 2 is probably the sweet spot for this one.
However, you've got to remember that any time where they say, you can play up to this number, pardon me, you've just got to smash like 2 versions of the game together, that is code to people that know what they're talking about, that no one is meant to play it. Like, that is rubbish. Whereas, as you said, it doesn't add anything, no, but it was good. It's definitely an option. You could very easily go, I'd like to play this, but I play this with 3 other mates normally. I would not turn you off from buying 2 core sets and playing this as a 4 player and then keep on collecting new stuff as 4 players.
And it lets you experience the different adventures. I mean, I remember Scott Nicholson always said, you know, playing games solo and then playing cooperative games solo and then with other people, it's like the game has the same amount of fun in it. All you're doing by adding more people is you're dividing the amount of fun into the players. So in other words, there's only a quarter of the fun with 4 players as there is with 1 player. Depends on the game, I guess.
So 5 minutes into the game, you should just go, you know what, you can all leave and I can just have 100% of the fun by myself.
That just sounds like exactly like something like an engineer would say, like who just doesn't account for the fact that you're actually sitting around with mates at all.
Sounds like somebody that likes to play with himself would say.
Anyway, so in this game, what are you doing? You are investigators and you are investigating. And there's going to be a huge amount of different storylines. It starts off, you're investigating your own home. In fact, you're investigating the room you're stuck in. And this game works where, like many other games, you have a mythos phase where bad things happen and the game will advance what it's trying to do, the bad stuff. It has an agenda. It's not even hidden. It's right out there on the table. There's the agenda deck and there's the act deck. And the act is what the players are trying to advance. It's the good stuff. How you advance that is you get clues. You get clues by investigating, and that's one of the actions you can do in your turn. You can move to locations, you can draw cards, you can play cards, all that sort of stuff. So you basically have a mythos phase, you have an investigator phase where you do stuff, you have an enemy phase. If there's enemies out on the board, then that's when they attack, and then you have the clean up, rinse and repeat and start again. It's that simple.
And you have cards in the process that represent obviously the investigators, their weapons, items you find, cards that represent locations, events that happen to you. They're all in different little decks.
Yeah, so you build you have your own deck of cards as an investigator, and you're not deck building, so you have your fixed deck, although there is options to build your deck between the stories, because as how you do in the stories, you will get different amount of experience points, and you can spend that to upgrade cards or get different cards or get better cards. So there's the ability to refine your deck and have it get better and build you as a character. So in your deck, you can have guns, you can have clothes, you can have helpers. I had a dog, which was really great. You know, friends, bits and pieces. You also have events where things happen. And the card generally will have two parts. These are your hero cards or investigator cards. You'll have the main ability that the card does, but then you'll have some icons on the top left-hand side of the card that refer to how those cards can help you in skill tests. This is one of the areas of this game where it's a little bit different. So pretty much all of the Cthulhu Arkham-type games have skill tests, but in most others, you're rolling dice. So in this one, you've got four attributes. You've got a head attribute, you've got a feet attribute, you've got a reading attribute, and you've got a punching attribute. Right, yeah. So your willpower, your agility, your investigation ability, and some other thing.
Yeah.
Let's not get too technical. But so you'll have your investigator has certain intrinsic abilities that they can use. And some will be good in one area and some will be good in another. Then you can play cards just for those little icons. When you play them for that, they basically get discarded, but they add to the skill check. But instead of rolling a die, you've got a little bag, although one knock against the game is you have to provide your own bag.
I know. They want you to put the tokens in a bag, but don't give you the bag to put it in.
I bet they're going to be selling some sweet, sweet bags coming up soon.
Fantasy Flight selling add-ons that should have been in the base box.
That's right. Anyway, so you've
that
got...
That is surprising.
You've got a bag of tokens, and the tokens go anywhere from, I think, plus one is the highest. So you're comparing your skill and the check that you're trying to pass. From plus one down to minus five. Four, plus some special ones that they will change depending on the adventure.
Look, I initially thought this was really a naff idea, drawing tokens out of a bag instead of just rolling a bloody dice. But by the end of the game, I was digging it because of those special tokens. The meaning of them, the interpretation of them, the rules around them changes from scenario to scenario. And I now understand that you can remove some of the tokens to adjust the difficulty of the game.
You can make it harder or easier, which I really like. So if you feel like you're really getting through things easier, you just put more bad ones in, less good ones.
Yeah, every scenario, there's four different difficulty levels you can choose from. Normal, very easy to harden. At the end of the day, I thought the same thing. I thought, where's my dice? I love my dice. I love rolling dice. We all love rolling dice. We are the dice men. But dice is in everything, so it doesn't hurt to have one game that's slightly different, and it's a decent alternative.
And look, if I can stick my hand into a sweet silky bag and pull out a surprise, I'm going to do that every time.
Is anybody else feeling really creeped out?
I've still got the tentacle jokes and now I've got these ones as well.
All the hair on my arms has just stood up on end.
Okay. So anyway, so you as the investigators, you're trying to forward the story and have good things happen. The game's trying to do bad things to you, to kill you, to send you mad. And as I said, in the base set, there's three stories. But wait, there will be more because... There's expansions.
Oh, yeah.
It's a living card game. The story will live on. And already they've announced two standalone mini scenario packs, which are sort of you can add on your big campaign as side quests, or you can do them as completely separate. But then there are going to be these, I guess they're going to call them something like deluxe expansions, which are basically another box the same size as the base game, which will have another, which will have some new investigators, which will have some more stories. And then if they follow the pattern that they have, there will then be mini expansions that come from that deluxe expansion. And already they've announced the first three of the expansions that go with the new deluxe expansion. Now, I think the standalone ones are about to come out. In fact, a good friend of ours from a local game store gave me yell to say they've got the first one already.
Standalone?
So the standalone scenario. So they're not linked into the direct story. You see, the idea is you can do them as like sort of side quests, and they're like a little pack of 60 cards.
Right. Okay. Look, I had virtually zero interest in this when you first showed it to me, but I have to say I quite enjoyed it. I found the rules, I mean, aside from the usual Fantasy Flight Games wonky rule book, the rules are quite intuitive.
Yeah, I thought it wasn't too bad.
It was certainly easier to understand than the Lord of the Rings card game.
Yes.
I was just going to say that I set this up to play with my wife and was trying to read through the rules, and I ended up stopping before we played it because I just wasn't in the right state of mind. I thought because
you piked out again.
Yeah, my thing apparently.
Yeah.
But because this is a story-driven game, which we haven't mentioned yet, so the replayability, not like other games where you can play it once and then that's the end of the story. This you probably could replay a couple of times with a couple of different friends, different characters, but it is story-driven, so it's not going to be anything new.
But you'd have to be tweaking your deck every time you did that?
No, you can just play with different characters and different numbers.
I've played it three times. I've only played the one adventure.
Yeah.
I played it once solo, once with four, once with two.
Yeah.
I've played a different character every time.
Yeah.
And because you have a big, thick mythos deck with the bad stuff that's coming at you, and you only see a portion of that,
yeah.
Although I know I know vaguely where the story's going, the stuff that's coming at me turn by turn has been really different.
So it has got replayability,
yeah,
you think?
I think so.
Sorry, Leon, but I'm struggling to deal with this understanding of tweaking your deck as you get experience and moving through the scenario versus replaying the game with different friends.
Yeah, so I played the base deck.
So you have to reset your deck at the start of every game.
Well, we played it first trend. That was the first time we played. And when we got experience at the end to build our deck, we only added like two different cards from what we started.
And
I basically had to just find those two cards and pull them out and put the original two
just
back
keep
in.
Track of
that was quite simple. And because the basic deck list is in the instruction manual, that was quite easy to work out.
Yeah, so the reason I said that we did actually not play it in the end was because I wanted to make sure that I knew the rules 100%, because there's nothing worse than playing a game that doesn't have heaps of replayability and finding out that you've done something wrong. So that's why I kind of bottled it for another day. But then the second that Mark set it up for us, explained the game to us, and we were playing it, within 30 seconds I went, okay, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So it is the fantasy fight kind of thing of the rule books kind of lure you into a sense of, okay... But then I was just like, I'm still not confident enough to try this.
Well, they do,
but
they
it's
do,
not difficult. It's
yeah,
not
they
difficult.
Do have the play guide that basically walks you through. Mm. They have the rules reference, which has all the keywords and everything. It's more of an encyclopedia. And then there's the campaign guide, which mostly doesn't have rules. It mostly has sort of the bits of story that you read out to start and the bits at the end, depending on the result. So I wanted to say, look, I love the art. I loved how easy it was to set up and play. The rules weren't too bad considering it's Fantasy Flight. I mean, of course, it's a card game and a lot of the rules are on the cards themselves. But generally, and I have played a lot of card games, I found it quite good. The story I've been really enjoying, and I've only played the first one. As I said, I played it three times and I've really enjoyed it. I found it engaging. And I think there is replayability in there, apart from the fact, and look, I want to come back and talk about this briefly after the break, because I know I've been rambling on for a while. I just want to talk about expansions and compare what they've done with a previous game to what might happen with this.
Well, I'm interested in this living card game cooperative model, because the thing I like about this is that in my head this won't create the sort of fiercely competitive tournament scene that you have in something like Netrunner.
It's exactly what I was about to jump in and say. Those games we love, but it's hard to jump in.
Yeah.
Fantasy Flight games have cottoned onto this, and we can talk about what Netrunner's doing in just a moment.
Yep.
We'll be back in just a sec. Play you a tune, the sounds of Control from Cool Sounds. It's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, with the Dice Man Cometh.
That was Control by Cool Sounds on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. And Mark, you've got some fun statistics for
us. Yeah, well, look,
we love statistics on this show.
And I like saying statistics.
Well, it's not so much statistics, it's dollars. And that's even more fun. So when I started to think about this Arkham Horror, it's a game I could get into, as I said, like to play it solo. And, you know, get you guys into it as well. I thought about, well, what other models are there out there that's going to give me an idea of what I might be in for here? And of course, what came to mind was, and you mentioned it briefly, the Lord of the Rings living card game, which I had the good fortune to play a few years back with the good friend of the show, Nathan, in Vancouver.
Are they even making that anymore?
Well, I said the same thing. Oh, I wonder what's happened with that. So that came out, believe it or not, 2011.
Oh, the halcyon days.
So what it's had, it's obviously had the base game. It's had seven of these deluxe expansions, which are basically as big as the base game. Each of those deluxe expansions then has a cycle where they bring out six of the mini expansions. It's also had seven saga expansions, where like the same size as the deluxe expansions in the base game, but they haven't had the cycle that came off them. But they have then have had seven standalone mini expansions. So for people who are adding it up at home, I added up to $1,155 US
spread over
five years or so. But that's starting with, like, the pricing.
And that's if you brought everything.
Yes, and that's, not quite, because there's some other stuff, there's some accessories, there's play, there's always playmats. I've got my first playmat on the way, even, for Arkham, because I'm a sucker for a playmat. And the latest cycle is still being released now. So this game is still being supported, still out there after 6 years. So, have I made a mistake? Because, you know, I'm a completionist. I don't know.
Well, look, we love this new cooperative LCG model. And the guys at Fantasy Flight Games have clearly thinking they've got a good thing on their hands, because this is the way that Netrunner is going. Yeah. And this brings us to board gaming news. So Netrunner is going legacy with...
What?
Terminal Directive. It's a brand new, what they're calling a campaign expansion.
Wow.
Which is going to give a scenario telling the story of a murder investigation. It's for two players who will have to choose from the outset whether or not they are runners or corporations, and they'll have to stick with that role for the rest of the campaign, and they'll play through a doubtlessly very expansive and expensive series of ongoing expansions. There are stickers... This being a legacy game, which you play onto a separate playing sheet called a pad, personal
access device. Something.
I mean, it's a piece of paper. you need a core box to play. Mm-hmm. So this is a brand new way to sort of start expanding that core box. There's a little bit of confusion at the moment. This was announced in November. About whether or not you're going to be able to use all your other cards, or how these cards get to be used in the tournaments, although they are tournament legal, apparently, but no one quite knows how that's going to work, or how the rotation policy that Netrunner has had to bring into their tournaments, because they've got so many waves and cycles of expansions that they phase some in and out, rotate some in and out of tournament play. The Netrunner StimHack community is notoriously nitpicking and anal, so this announcement about this new direction for the game has annoyed as many people as it has pleased. I think it's a great idea for casual players or for people who are just looking to get on board what is a pretty intimidating looking game.
Yeah, because I've played probably half a dozen games of Netrunner, and it's absolutely... I love the game. But
it's a cracker.
But my God, you'd never be able to learn it without somebody there to go, does this make a sense to you? No, well, let's have a crack and see what it means. Because it's really difficult to wrap your head around, but it is really good. But if they could come out with this and say, right, here's the base box, and here's this whatever thing, maybe in the same box. How about that? Just to make it simple for people and go... Buy this, you need nothing else.
No, but that would be cheaper.
Oh. Because as soon as you said that,
where's
I was like...
Where's the money in that, Leon?
When you started the conversation, I was like, I haven't heard of this, I'm sold. And then you said, oh, but there's a chance you can add in all the other mini expansions. Like, okay, I'm out again.
Well, what I want to know, because I have some of the expansions for Netrunner, I want to know is, do I have to pull those out of my core box now?
Just buy another core box.
Oh, no! Okay, I have realised that I no longer fully understand the hobby that I'm a part of. Gentlemen?
Fair enough.
But I think it's actually a good thing, all right? Because I think it's an inevitable thing, and I think it's just part of growing older, which is why I don't understand things anymore.
Yeah, well, you didn't like the new Mad Max, so clearly you're losing your mind.
That's true, I didn't. I thought it was terrible.
Horrible.
The My Little Pony Tales of Equestria core rulebook for the RPG will be a 152-page hardcover, accompanied by the Curse of the Statuettes Adventure Story Box and the Tokens of Friendship Props Set, which includes gems made from pure crystallized friendship.
I'm not seeing the problem. What's your issue with this?
The My Little Pony Tales of Equestria core rulebook comes out in March from Shinobi.
Yeah, you're right. March is a while to wait for
I'm just saying I don't understand it, all right? But you know what? I'm glad that's happened. Okay, let's move on to the biggest news of the moment. What the hell is going on Kickstarter? Leon, can you explain it?
What's going on Kickstarter? Well, I haven't gone on Kickstarter much of late after my plethora of buying everything in the last 2 years.
And normally over Christmas, there isn't really that much going on.
But I logged on there today to sort, oh, we might go through with these and give them an update on some stuff for some people. And then I saw a game on there that I knew, the name seemed familiar. And then I saw how much it made. And then I looked away from the screen and then looked back. And I know Joke did that about 10 times. And saw that the new version of Kingdom Death Monsters, which is a game that was on Kickstarter several years ago, and I believe was... I don't know the full story. I should have researched it. I'm not very good at this job. That's because they don't pay me. But I believe it was notorious for the fact that it took forever to come out and was plagued with issues where people were going like, this was to come out 2 years ago. What's going on? A new version is updated on there, and it has made $9 million.
More than that. And the rest. In fact, just bring it up live in the studio while we can. Here we go. So check it as of.
It has made $100,000 since I looked at it about 2 hours ago.
Right. So the previous record for any kind of tabletop game on Kickstarter was $8.7 million, notoriously raised by Exploding Kittens. Thank you. In 2015, Kingdom Death Monster 1.5. Yes, yeah. That's the name.
Wow. Yeah.
Has smashed that record, 9.3 million, and at time of broadcast, there were 62 hours to go on that. What is Kingdom Death Monster?
You try to explain it, because I can't.
It's the biggest, sloppiest piece of a merry trash you'll ever see.
Yeah.
It's a massive miniatures game.
Yeah, imagine if Descent was twice as dark and literally 20 times more complicated.
And it's full of nasty horror miniatures and graphics and a lot of boobs and things like rivers of poo.
Yeah. And it's like Dark Souls the board game, but there's already a Dark Souls the board game. So
animals being eviscerated and that kind of, and you know what? Probably the nicest thing you can say about it is, boy, those miniatures sure are sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that in the game, as the campaign goes along, where you're building a society, I believe, which just sounds crazy, when your characters get upgraded and have new armor, there's new miniatures of your character with that new armor on. So in the base box, there's like the four main characters, and then there's like six other versions of them with different armor and stuff, which all sounds all well and good.
And this thing has put expansions and add-ons galore into the campaign. Oh, yeah. They're not even promising to deliver it all anytime soon. They're saying 2020.
Yeah, 20. I saw that, and after I saw that and saw 2020, and then saw 9 million, and then saw 2020, and saw 9 million.
Wow.
And people might know that listen to this show, I spend a bit of money on just random shash, and saw that and went, because the base of this game, to get just the base game, is $250 US. So that's $7,000 Australian.
Actually,
which
I
is
love
just
this.
Insane.
I love that they've got Kickstarters they don't even know. I mean, stretch goals they don't even know what they are.
Yeah.
And they ran out of stretch goals at 900,000.
So to get all the expansions plus the base game for this, a game that's not coming out for 3 years, maybe based off its history, is going to cost you over $1,000 US.
And it's smashing it.
That's the point I was going to make is Exploding Kittens made 8 million with 219,000 backers. This has made 9 million.
Yep.
With 16,000 backers.
Right, there you go.
So, you know,
where
people were putting into Exploding Kittens, you know, $20, $30,
$40,
these people are putting in hundreds, if not 1,000.
As I say, I no longer understand the hobby that I'm a part of. But here's one thing that I instantly understood, and it's a little badge I want to give to WizKids, who have announced an early contender for the best named game of 2017. And I'm going to say this name, and you're going to understand this game instantly, and you're going to want to play it. Mm-hmm. Dicebot Mega Fun. It's coming in June. You can take your pick from a junkyard of custom dice, select a variety of lethal weapons, and duke it out in the arena with fellow robots. Plays 2 to 4 players.
Sounds like Dice Masters.
Dice Masters
Dice
with robots.
Bot Mega Fun. I've got a heap more news. Shall we play a song and come back to it?
Why not?
Let's do that. All right. More board gaming news coming up in just a moment. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, the Dice Man Cometh.
9 million. What's wrong with people?
That was Tiny Ruins with Hurtling Through. It sounds like a minis game where you're hurtling through some tiny ruins with your little miniature things.
Didn't really sound like that.
No, not in the slightest.
Okay. Well, we won't use that as theme music the next time we're playing Kingdom Death Monster or any other miniatures game like that.
Yeah, if any of our listeners have that, please send it to us so we can play it and find out what's going on.
Oh, we just like to look at the pretty miniatures for a little while. The thing that, because I have to say, I actually came very close to backing it on Kickstarter today because I thought, hey, if it's a bandwagon, I should be on it. Because I've never had an original thought in my life, of course. But I believe it's the sort of random game where, you know, one dice roll can sort of annihilate you halfway through your campaign, and so you got to go back and start again. Anyway, continuing with the board gaming news, Gale Force 9 has a new Doctor Who game on the way. Early in 2017, Gale Force 9 gave us Firefly, Spartacus.
Yes,
Sons of Anarchy.
Yep. They announced the acquisition of the rights to Doctor Who back in 2015, so maybe that means they've been taking their time actually thinking about making a good game rather than just slapping the name on something.
Well, they've got some good runs on the board.
Maybe. At the very least, the Time of the Daleks sounds like a Doctor Who game you might actually want to play for the first time, I think. It plays up to six, each player being a different incarnation of the Doctor.
Ooh.
All right, see, straight away.
That's pretty cool.
Trying to get to Gallifrey before the Daleks do and, I don't know, wipe you out of existence or something. It's a co-op with companions, challenges, timey-wimey cards, a wonderful spiralling clock face board. Look, it might be crap, but it looks interesting.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Does it come with a rule set on how you are to judge the punch-up at the start of the game as to who gets to be David Tennant? Because...
Is he your favourite, is he?
I want to see Matt Smith with Romana
I hate to break it to you, but he's the favourite of 99% of the world.
Surely Tom Baker... Or is this a generational thing?
Is that scarf guy?
No, I'm
a proper nerd. I know what he's talking about.
Speaking of old English properties, Warlord Games, producers of miniatures for Beyond the Gates of Antares and Terminator Genesis, has secured the rights for properties from the 2000 AD magazine.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking about...
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd will be the only one that Leon will have heard of.
Yep.
Nemesis the Warlock.
That sounds like words.
Robusters.
Sounds sexy.
Rogue Trooper.
A little less sexy.
What about Johnny Fart Pants?
I think that's Viz Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Buster Gonad.
Yeah. And his unfeasibly large testicles.
Their first release will be miniatures for Strontium Dog.
Oh, Strontium Dog,
Do you know Strontium Dog, Leon?
No.
Oh, my God. He's the mutant who was forced to be a bounty hunter.
Oh.
Anyway, no release date as yet for that. Rob Davio, who delivered us...
The legacy dude.
Who delivered us... Well, the legacy idea.
The legacy of legacy.
And Seafall last year to a huge round of indifference. he's announced his follow-up to Seafall. He's going to be working with Aiello Games on an adaptation of Mountains of Madness. That's right. Rob Davio is doing Lovecraft. Now, everybody shut up about it and don't mention it again until it comes out because I don't want it to fall victim to the hype machine.
Yeah.
Just let it be what it's going to be.
Who'd you say he's doing it with? Yellow Games?
Yeah, who...
As in King of Tokyo.
Exactly.
The guys that make beautiful yet kiddie type art and stuff. Okay. That's not the studio I would have assumed that would do that, but that's interesting.
Designer and publisher Martin Wallace has announced the end of his Tree Frog Games venture. He'll be concentrating exclusively on design from here on in. According to reports, he just can't hack the competition. It's just too much work to keep Tree Frog Games going.
Well, I mean, really, his bread and butter was always the design. You know, he did cop a lot of flack quite a few times for poor communication on delivery of games. I don't want to go any further with that one.
Also, I believe
good for the hobby.
He lives in New Zealand.
Yes.
The company's based in England.
Yes.
That might have presented problems. I don't know. Look, the last game from Tree Frog is going to be called A Handful of Stars. It's a 4X space game using the few acres of snow card mechanic.
Yep.
Production will be limited to just 2,500 copies, wow, which will only be sold through pre-orders from the website. So fans of Martin Wallace can get their hands on a collector's item there.
What else have Tree Frog done other than Last Night on Earth? Because that's the only thing I can think of. Because that's them, isn't it?
No.
That's not true. Oh, that's Flying.
Flying Frog.
Oh, okay. Oh, so many frogs going
totally
around.
Totally different.
Should magic judges be considered employees of Wizards of the Coast? This is the essence of a lawsuit that's been filed by a group of long-term US-based magic judges against Wizards, and it was lodged in April of 2016. Their argument is, and it still hasn't been resolved, their argument is that these judges do work for the benefit of the game and therefore for Wizards of the Coast. They supervise activities. Wizards relies on them for their events and their tournaments to actually function. And they're saying, well, this creates an employee-employer relationship, and so they want to get paid. They want meal breaks. They want overtime, stuff like that. Now, traditionally, these judges have just been volunteers who get certified by Wizards.
Yeah.
We know a couple here.
Yeah.
All right. They're all over the world. And they officiate at these tournaments, most of which are pretty small. They run at the local level, and they're usually run by game shops that the judges are employed by. Right, so the judges are getting paid to be there on the day by their employer, but not by Wizards.
And I'm sure there would be perks in terms of T-shirts and cards and stuff like that.
See, I didn't know this. So you're telling me the World Championship of Magic, which has...
Right. So the World Championship, those very top-level tournaments, yes, the judges do get paid.
Right, okay. I was going to say, if they didn't get paid, that's insanity.
At the lower level, it's not the case, and this is the argument in this lawsuit.
Lower level, maybe, but mid-level, when we're talking still hundreds of people in a tournament, and if it's an official thing that Wizards have put on and advertised, then yeah.
This is all in deliberation at the moment, but it appears to have had a knock-on effect within Wizards of the Coast and probably for other companies as well, because Wizards has decided to shut down its in-house D&D organized play volunteer organization. So instead, they've decided to ship this out to a newly established not-for-profit group. Called the Herald's Guild, which will run what they're calling the D&D Ambassadors Program. The organisation remains very heavily connected to Wizards of the Coast, of course, and there's clearly a perceived need for this company to distance itself from relying on the goodwill of its fans too much by setting up this other organisation so they can't be seen to be exploiting them. And that's the news.
There you go. Now, before we get carried away with anything else, we've got something very exciting to announce.
Do we?
What? Our competition winners. Have we got time to do that?
Let's play a song.
We're going to go to a break and come back.
Let's play a song, come back and
do
that.
We're going to come back and draw our competition winners.
All right. It's Radio 99.3 FM. It's the Dice Man Cometh. It's Radio 99.3 FM. Come Down by Anderson. Park. I could pretend that I know how to pronounce that, but what's the point, really? Because this is a show about board games, and there's no way that I'm going to be hip with the lingo.
No.
Yep.
Hey, we've been hip with our listeners, though.
Oh, we have got... Like, I want to say thank you so much to everyone. I mean, I know thank you to us for running it. Thank you to Area 52 giving us these amazing prizes. But thank you to everyone who entered, because we sort of said, oh, and look, if you want to give us some feedback as well, that'd be really great. I think almost everyone who entered, and there were quite a few, gave us some feedback, which was really nice.
Because over the last couple of weeks, we've been running our Ain't No Party Game Like a...
Ain't No Party Like a Dustman Cometh Party Game Party.
Gody Game
Party
Competition
game,
where we've been sending people to our website to click on a picture of me in a stupid Christmas sweater to enter to win a whole bunch of stuff. And thanks again to Area 52 for helping us out with this and supporting the show and supporting Edge Radio as well.
And gentlemen, the winners are Sheriff of Nottingham is won by Dylan Eggley.
Hey,
Sushi Go Party has been won by Angie Knight.
Hey.
Punderdome has been won by Ben Kirsten.
Oh, Ben, we're so sorry.
Condolences. Please do listen.
And you know what? What we're going to do to improve that for you, Ben, is send Mark around to your house to play it with you.
Yeah. No, thanks. And Lil Cthulhu has been won by Joshua Arnett. Though they are our four listeners. So because we were so clever this time and we got you to send your addresses with your entries, we don't need to contact you to get your addresses anymore. So we'll get those games out post haste.
Where are these guys?
We have got one person in little old Taswegia here. Two of them are from Victoria, just a random happenstance, and one from the US of A, I think is in the great old state of Texas.
Awesome.
That is amazing. We'll be getting more details from you to pay for the shipping.
Well, that's why we're not sending Kingdom Death Monster or the other Seven Sins and all the million expansions. And look, thanks again to everyone who entered, and thank you so much to Area 52, one of our friendly local game stores. They have been fantastic supporting us. We had Nicole in to talk about the Christmas games, and I'm sure we'll get her back again because she knows her stuff.
Now, past couple of weeks, we've also been talking about our games of the year for 2016, and I think, because some of us picked games that not all of the others had played, so we kind of want to have a little bit of a right of reply. Leon, you only just got to play my game of the year, Mansions of Madness.
Yes.
It's amazing, isn't it? Say yes.
It is really, really good.
Validate my opinion.
I will give you that. The only negative I probably would have added to the conversation a few weeks ago was that since at the moment, until they add variability to the app so you can play the same scenario like a couple of different times with slightly different ways of things happening.
They are slightly different.
Okay.
Yeah. Not massively.
Well, that I think that first scenario, I think because it's quite small, there's limited changeability. Okay. But I know certainly the big, huge one I played, I know that can change up quite a bit.
Either way, my point being, anything that has limited or even very little replayability value, one of the things that can happen in this game is that you can get a special condition where one person can kind of screw over everyone else and win themselves.
Yes.
That almost happened in the game we played, which took about 2.5 hours, which was great. But if that had happened at the end of 2.5 hours, and a scenario we could probably never replay again because we knew what was in every room, I would have been a very unhappy boy. And I think that's a thing that a lot of people probably would have felt.
That almost happened, the game that I played, the scenario went for 5 hours.
Yeah, me and my wife almost both did it on two separate things. I thought I'd done it, but I was wrong, and then she was like one turn away from doing it.
Are you talking about it's one of the when you go mad and you get those conditions?
Both of us had. So everyone ended up winning except her, I think.
Yeah.
Ended up getting a different one, so I was kind of fine in the end. But yeah, if that happened after a long game and you can't replay it,
So you're talking about the problem being where somebody wins once they've gone insane, they've got their own unique winning condition as a result of that, and everybody else loses, but that person... I think that creates an interesting tension.
I was going to say, I just love that becomes part of the story.
I think that's all true, except for the fact that the game offers limited replayability. That's the issue. Between those two things together, I think that's an issue.
Those things, because those things are coming off from cards and there's stacks of cards, you're not going to get that same condition every time you go insane. But yeah, interesting.
I did want to take just a moment to compare Mansions of Madness to the Arkham Horror card game.
Yes.
In terms of replayability, because I suspect the card game might come up trumps in that sense. And I also felt that playing the card game, you're doing the same thing. You're an investigator going into a haunted house, looking at locations,
a lot of skill checks.
Okay, it's more or less the same thing in a different format.
Yeah.
But I did feel that the card game, you had a bit more player agency in there. You know, the player was a lot more in control of what was going on, whereas Mansions of Madness was a lot more of just reacting to the app, maybe.
Although the game's quicker and you know it's shorter, so you know you've kind of got to get a move on because the card game's going to bite you very quickly.
And I guess with Mansions, you're exploring and you've got the various icons on the app, whereas in the card game, you're investigating and you're just getting those clue tokens. So there's a bit of difference.
Either way, between those two and Eldritch, there's still three of the best games in the whole hobby, in my opinion.
And I also wanted to talk about Terraforming Mars.
My game of the year.
Well,
and Garth's.
And you know what? I think this may have come close to being mine as well, because what a great, great game this is. It's genius in the simplicity of its structure, combined with the variety and the complexity of the cards and the combos that can be made. You've got personal empire building. It's a race with enough interaction to upset players without completely derailing them at the same time. So there's not really a runaway leader while you're playing. There's no alpha gamer problem. There is some analysis paralysis, I think, but everybody's drawing their cards and deciding what they want at the same time. So that's a shared experience. You're not waiting for somebody to make a decision.
And my experience, even after a couple of games, was that that improves because you get to know some of the cards, and you get to know, you know what, this is an amazing card, but because it costs 30, there's no way I'm going to get to this in the next two or three turns, but I'm going to burn it.
I do wish it was a little prettier.
That's probably the reason why I walked away from that table and
really?
Had no interest. And even now, after all you guys have said it's amazing, I still don't have that much interest in playing it.
I love the look of it. I love that. What do we say? It's the Kim Stanley Robinson, E.E. Doc Lensman, E.E. Doc Smith Lensman,
hey,
that
listen,
70s sort of sci-fi look.
I can cut it some slack because it's a sort of first game by these designers. Yeah. And I just think that a later reprint and a graphic redesign would do it justice.
Well, I mean, clearly it's eminently expandable because it's all in the cards.
It should look more attractive to sell the game than it actually is, I suppose.
How can you go past those metal cubes for money? Oh, I love them.
Are they the ones that slide around the card and don't fit in the places?
No, they're the little plastic cubes.
Oh,
yeah. We're going to fix that with the new player mats that come out as an expansion.
It is getting reprinted this month, actually.
Oh,
new copies are arriving at Stronghold Games HQ, so they'll eventually trickle down here.
I was just telling someone I met in the lift today about it.
Right.
I'm loving it.
You know what Terraforming Mars is? It's the sequel to Race for the Galaxy that I've actually always wanted.
Yes.
Right?
With a bit more player interaction.
And I think if you enjoy that game, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
All right?
No, not just as well, because it's sci-fi, but it's the way you're sort of building sort of a tableau and you're get going on, you're getting bigger and bigger, you're getting more money to spend, more cards to spend. Yeah, the feel of it, not just the theme, but the feel of it as well.
Hey, we got to wrap up and get out of here. Thanks to Edge for letting us on again this week. Big cheerio to everybody, all our friends in Canberra, getting ready for CanCon.
Oh, you're lucky.
We should have a chat to Terry and Merrin, actually, just in the next week or so.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Just in the lead up and as they get set for another huge edition of CanCon for 2017. Until then, and until next week, where the Dice Man cometh, we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.
This has been an edit of the Dice Man cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.